Sorry, I was a little bit late. I was at this barbecue and everybody was really good. I bought Cards Against Humanity at PAX.
All right, yeah.
Well, they had a pretty big booth at PAX that was just, like, but they were just selling. Like, they were literally just selling. You know, everybody was, they had all the booster packs. They were selling the big boxes. They had everything. They made a killing.
I bet they did. Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Super License F1 podcast. I'm Rodney.
I'm Zachary.
Zach, we're here to talk about Formula One. There was a race this week. It's been a little while.
Yeah, you mean the Melbourne Cup race today? Yeah, it was huge.
It was the race that stops the nation. The nation stops, we watch the race, and then we go back, not to work, go back to drinking, I guess.
Go back to drinking on a Tuesday.
Yeah. You had a barbecue today, right?
Yeah. You know what I didn't know about today? The public holiday, I thought it was for all of, like, our state. It's only for Metro Melbourne.
Are you saying that if you're in rural Victoria, you don't get a holiday today?
Nope. I know. Apparently they do. They do their show days, like the Bendigo show or the Ballarat
I know Bendigo
show.
Has a cup day, but I just assumed that they had Melbourne cup day off.
No. It's a Metro Melbourne public holiday. So, sorry, Ararat. I'm sorry, Echuca, but no, only Metro Melbourne. So we all had the day off and have been at barbecues. I've been at a barbecue. I played Cards Against Humanity. I had beers. I am in the zone. Let's talk about this F1 race.
We've got lots of things to talk about. We're going to talk about some news. We've got a quiz. We've got a talk with an F1 expert. I wanted to just kick things off, though. There was a big achievement this week. Our partners and friends at Last Word on Sport reached 10,000 articles.
That's how... 10,000. That's how incredible they are. If you're into other sports or even Formula One and you're not on that site reading one of those 10,000 articles, you're crazy. Get on there right now. You can read about all types of things.
Yeah, and good on them. I mean, that just shows that they know what they're doing. They've been around. They've got a big team working just on Formula One, but they cover all kinds of other sports. Last word on sport. That's worth checking out.
Don't let it be the last thing you read. Let it be the first.
But, you know, we're here to talk about F1 because that's what we know. So let's kick things off with some F1 news.
Guido van der Gaard. Hey, how are you? I was going to say a Dutch swear word. It's the only Dutch word I know, but I don't know. It's what does that mean? Okay, it's not so bad. Oh, phew. Oh, it's the only Dutch word I know.
Marcus Ericsson, Zach, what do you know about him? I know that he has the best hair in F1.
Wow. Really? The best hair in F1? Yep. What about Lewis Hamilton's weird frizzy fro?
Zach, that's pretty good. Don't get me started.
I'm not even sure that he likes it. He takes off his helmet and he's like, oh, smooth up.
No one look. Don't look up here.
Give me a cap quick.
Marcus Ericsson's going to get a cap next year. He's going to be driving for Sauber. That's been confirmed by the team this week.
Do you think he deserves to be at Sauber?
I think they need a driver who is good enough and has a little bit of cash flowing out of his pockets, and Marcus Ericsson ticks both of those boxes. I think, though, it'll be good for him to maybe take a little bit of a step up. Not that Sauber from Caterham is a huge step, but it'd be good to see what he can actually do in a decent car. It's just hard to judge people when they're that far back.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't even know if they're in a decent car right now. I hope it's more decenter next year. More decenter. But, yeah, good for him. Good for him that, you know, he's definitely got a seat for next year. Mm. But what does that mean for Esteban Guitar Hero and Adrian I Love Music from Movies Sutil?
Well, that's the big question. Adrian Sutil seems to be on the outers. The red hot tip was that Guido van der Gaard was going to take the second Sauber seat. That's been rumored for months and months and months. But just lately, the hot tip is that Guitar Hero has got enough backing, enough star power saved up, accrued. With the Mexican race on the calendar next year, he might be a bit of a valuable asset for the team.
Yeah, maybe they should just run three drivers. You know, they're not going to be challenging for the world championship. Why don't they rotate them out?
Rotate them out, you reckon? Maybe, like, you know, one does half of the year, the other one does the other half of the year.
Oh, you know, just, oh, no, like, keep it a three rotation, so, like, an interchange. It's like, oh, we've got back-to-back races. Guitar Hero, you can do this one, but then you can't do, like, you can do Japan, but not Sochi. Guido van der Gaard will come in for Sochi, but then, you know, then Guitar Hero, you're in for the next race, because Ericsson won't be racing. Just interesting things like that, because Guido van der Gaard is too attractive to not be in a Formula One car.
Well, especially once he gets some hair care tips from Marcus Ericsson.
Oh, mate, he's just, he's so smiley and fun. He's around all the races anyway. I just wish he was on the track.
He was around all the races this year as a Caterham driver. The question remains, though, what's going to happen with Caterham next year? Because obviously, since last race, they've gone into administratorship.
Which is a long word to say they got no money. And somebody else has had to come in and go, hey, so about you, like, racking up all that debt and then deciding that you weren't going to pay anyone, including your staff, that's no good. And you know that Formula One doesn't really make any money, right? Like,
presumably they knew that coming in.
Like, that should be on the top of the, you want, so you, like, there should be a wiki. So you want to enter Formula One. First line, 1.1. You know it doesn't make any money, right?
Yeah.
Question mark.
Well, that's like the old joke. How do you become a millionaire? You become a billionaire and then you buy an F1 team.
I haven't heard that. That's pretty good.
Obviously, Caterham didn't come to Austin. It doesn't look like they're going to be heading to Brazil either. And even Abu Dhabi looks like a bit of a stretch. But after they went into administratorship and the news broke, it seems like Marussia just went, that's the thing that we can do? I didn't even know that. We can do that? We don't have to go? We're not going. Forget it.
Wait, you got a sweet deal where you don't have to be in two races? I'm calling Bernie right now.
Mm.
Bernie, mate, hey, we don't want to go for the next two. We are a bit tired.
So Caterham and Marussia both in administratorship. This is... I mean, we joke, but this is shocking.
We've lost two teams. I mean, what are we doing wrong, Rod? Is it too expensive? Is the sport broken?
It's always been expensive, and we may as well just talk a little bit about it, but there was a team principal press conference on Friday where they talked about all of these issues, and Toto Wolff in particular, representing the big team in Mercedes, said, you know, if you're an entrepreneur and you think you can afford to compete in F1, unless you're actually, you know, going to get any... competitive performance out of your car, you should be expecting to not make money. You should be expecting to lose actually quite a lot of money. Mm. There's been this argument, though, that this year these new engines that have come in have cost up to $60 million in development costs. And, you know, if that was... That's something that the teams, you know, they didn't come up with that number. That was the people who run Formula One that came up with that number. And it puts a big hurt on their bank balance.
Well, that's right. I mean, for those entrepreneurs, it's the most expensive form of horse racing. Basically, you know, you're buying yourself a stable and you're buying yourself a bunch of stuff. But, you know, that I think we're like fans like us, we're all sort of, well, me personally, I'm under the impression that people are trying to build a team when really these, it just seems like with the graveyard of teams behind us in the past, it's just sort of they appear and they disappear. And especially those backmarket teams, no one's coming into the sport and then sort of rising to the top other than maybe Red Bull. I suppose Mercedes, kind of, if you could put it that way, maybe Braun, but it's not something you're just going to, you throw some money at, you build a team and then it's competitive. It's this continual cost, week in, week out, development through the whole year, development for the next year. It doesn't really end. And all the people who are there on race weekends, all the team principals and all the drivers and all the engineers, treat it like a development cycle, where sometimes I feel like the investors just treat it as something they'll do for a couple of years, as opposed to trying to build like a new company. They build it just like it's a small dabble and, you know, the team will go away and somebody will buy it and it'll all work out.
There are rumors going around. Ted Kravitz broke this, I think, on the Notebook this weekend that Marussia may be doing a licensing deal with someone for next year. If they can get that deal signed off, they may be making an appearance at Abu Dhabi just to finish off the season, which would be really, really good. It's such a complicated thing, and I certainly don't have any answers. But, I mean, the issue of cost caps comes up again where you go, well, maybe there needs to be a cap put on what teams can spend, but there's also just such a disparity. There's something like a $200 million disparity between what the cheapest teams are spending and what the most, you know, well-off, well-funded teams are spending. So where does the cap go and how do you squeeze the bigger teams into those caps? I don't think there's an easy answer other than to say there has to be a change. Obviously, I don't think we're going to revolutionize the way the sport's run in the short term. Maybe we need some kind of sliding scale where over the next 10 years, the front teams do earn a little bit less money each year, and that's expected. Everyone knows about it. And that helps prop up the smaller teams, something like that. I don't know.
I just, if it costs X amount to be in the sport, then you don't enter the sport unless you think you can afford that. You know, there's, I know part of that is that, but teams enter expecting to get a championship point or be competitive not next year, but maybe the year after, and things get in the way of that. The sport moves pretty rapidly. So maybe we need a little bit more stability around the sport, you know, instead of changing formula all the time or changing regulations all the time. Maybe we need to be a little bit more steady so that teams can spend a year, or you know, new teams can spend a year developing and progressing before they enter the sport, so that they don't just enter and go, oh my God, actually, we're not competitive at all. Abort, abort, abort. Or let's just struggle away and hopefully some new teams will enter that are crapper than us and we can, you know, grab a point. It's really hard for basically non-car manufacturing teams to really move forward in this sport. Maybe that's just how the sport's going to go for a bit.
It's something I've been thinking about, and I have a half-written article in my head about the Red Bull model and how successful it's been, because they have this front-running team, you know, all-conquering world champions the last 4 years, but they also run a junior team and they develop drivers that eventually flow up into the top team. And maybe that's a cycle, that's a model that we actually need to have from Ferrari, and not just, well, the junior Ferrari drivers can race for whoever, Marussia or whatever, you know, have a bit of money, but an actual, like, all of the top four teams, let's say McLaren, Mercedes, Red Bull, and
Ferrari.
Who am I thinking of? Ferrari, exactly. They all actually have bona fide junior teams.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. You know, like the cool thing about Red Bull and Toro Rosso is that they run really, really separately. I think the fear is that if we had junior teams, that, well, you know, they'd be really helping each other out. Mm, but obviously, they play into the ego of the drivers and let them race. You know, like, it's not like Daniel Kvyat's really like, oh my God, quick, get out of the way of Daniel Ricciardo. Like, he's leaving him space, maybe a little bit more space than usually than he might leave other drivers. But it's not like they're not really racing.
No, and the smaller teams would benefit from the financial stability that the front-running teams enjoy.
How do you feel about cost-cutting, though, overall? Do we need to, like, drastically reduce the cost of Formula One?
I mean, if people were knocking on the door, you know, left, right and center, saying, I've got $600 million and I just want to race in F1 next year, it wouldn't be a problem. But the problem is those people aren't there, and the teams that are there are struggling to raise the money that they need. I sort of see both sides, but I think if you're struggling to keep enough teams on the paddock, then you need to look at what's keeping them out. And it seems like the fact that it's too expensive at the moment is what's holding everyone back.
Yeah, that's right. And that it's not too expensive for everybody. It's too expensive for the bottom half. You know, or probably not, you know, not the top four or five.
It's the teams that generate all the revenue for the sport. Without the teams, no revenue, right? But the teams are generating all this revenue and it's flowing to the winners. It's not flowing anywhere near enough to the backmarkers.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's a few issues. There's a few problems.
Yeah, you got to tackle, that's the thing. It can't be a, you know, tackle one issue at a time kind of solution. It's got to be everything, which means that you have to talk about the whole culture of the sport and the whole... People have recently been calling Formula One sort of this house of cards. You know, you sort of take a couple of cards away and it all sort of collapses on itself, and then suddenly you're down to, you know, non-regulation racing or, you know, a world championship that doesn't mean anything.
Not far away.
Yeah, which is really depressing. You know, I wrote Adam a global marketing exam late last week, and one of the essay questions I wrote about Formula One as a cultural and brand identity ideal, which is that Formula One has its own brand that it can market sort of everywhere because it taps into this niche motorsport market. But then, and it's really strong about defending that brand. You know, Formula One is the epitome of engineering, the epitome of sport, the epitome of spectacle. But then it lets the teams and the fans co-opt the drivers and the teams' names and everything. It doesn't let them co-opt the F1 name. They defend that so they can keep that specific and separate. But it lets the fans and the teams sort of co-opt their own names and grow the culture around that. And I really think that's what Formula One is missing in that bottom half. You know, the backmarkers teams don't have enough cultural support around them because they don't have histories. They don't have fan bases that are, you know, growing around the team, because the teams are just sort of assembled as opposed to grown. And I really want someone to come in and grow a team. You know, Red Bull kind of grew a team, I would say. You know, you would argue that all the staff at Red Bull probably feel like they've got a job for at least a few more years. Whereas if all the engineers who work for Haas next year should probably be going into that scenario going, I'm going to treat this as maybe a year's worth of work. Like, always be on the lookout for maybe another opportunity that's a little bit more stable, because at any moment your Formula One team might just fall apart.
Obviously, this is the topic that everyone's talking about at the moment. We strayed a little bit from F1 news, but anything else that you wanted to get onto before we take another step forward?
No, not really. The rest is just all silly season stuff. Where's Fernando going to go? Where's Jenson Button going?
Yeah, you know, not really any blah, 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 blah. Not really any developments or announcements in that space. So watch this space. There'll be a couple more episodes before the end of the year, and I'm sure we'll cover them when we know a bit more. But if we're done with news, it's time to move on to predictions.
This moment came to me in a dream.
Sometimes it's so close, it's scary.
Predictions.
It's scary.
I can feel it down in my lungs.
Predictions. Rodney, I predicted Rosberg would take pole and Hamilton was going to win. I was looking so good for a while. Oh. Well, for the first half of the first lap, because I had Perez for 10th He crashed straight out. He was the first driver out.
Yeah, no.
But you had Hamilton for pole and to win, and then Gutierrez for 10th. So Gutierrez was down there.
Yeah, 14th, I think.
Yeah, it would have taken a good day for him to get up to 10th.
So people needed Jev. Jev for 10th. Jev.
That's who you needed. It got a bit confusing, but there were a few penalties at the end. I think it all shook out more or less. It all came out in the wash, but Jev came 10th. That's who you wanted. Rosberg pole, Hamilton win, and Jev for 10th.
You know, someone actually, I can't remember who it was, but somebody actually went through the, like, who comes 10th the most stats. And I can't believe I didn't, like, bookmark it. Maybe I did. But yeah, Jev. Jev just comes 10th all the time.
Well, I mean, I assume we weren't imagining it. All these weeks we say who 10th is, and it makes sense.
Jev or Perez. That's Jev, who it Jev. Is. Box. Jev.
Well, you saw how bad our predictions were. Let's hear from some listeners. Now, we had a new listener this week from Paul Eric Frivold. Welcome to the community, buddy. Thank you for predicting. Had a really funny prediction from Andrew Scott. He predicted Maldonado. And he said the reason he wants Maldonado to come 10th is because there's no back markers this week for him to cash into. He was really close. Maldonado came 9th.
Yeah, I mean, really close. Good on Maldonado for getting a couple of points.
What are your predictions? Let's see what Steph has to say.
Hi, guys. Innocent Steph here back for another week of predictions. This week, the US GP. I'm just putting it out there that I am going balls out because I want to stand on the top step of the Super Licence prediction podium by the end of the season. With that in mind, I'm going to say Hamilton for pole, Hamilton for the victory, and Sebastian Vettel for 10th. And as my old mate Juan Pablo Montoya once said,
I play with a lot of balls because I'm just really late. I hate picking them up.
Have a great race, guys. Cheers.
I hope you do too, Steph. There's only a few left, so I hope you can stand on the top step of the podium before the season's out.
And the best thing about the Super Licence podium is that it is quadruple points in the last race. So if you make it on the top step, you know, at Abu Dhabi, you're four times better than anybody else.
Ian Schwartz had an audio prediction. What have you got to say, Ian?
Hey guys, Ian here. I got my predictions for the US Grand Prix. So I think Lewis Hamilton is going to put it on pole on Saturday. And then on Sunday, something's going to go wrong for him and Nico Rosberg's going to win. And then for 10th, I think it's going to go to Danny Kvyat. Okay, enjoy the race, guys.
Close, but no cigar.
Close with the
Daniil Kvyat.
But, you think that
Kvyat
would be on a high with his signing to Red Bull next year, but, you know.
He's not exactly pumping in the performances.
No, maybe he's just preparing himself.
It's lowering the bar.
Yeah, if you follow Ricardo and Alonso on Twitter, you probably know that they're having a beard off, and maybe
Kvyat
is trying to grow his beard already. Like, he's going to get a head start on those guys. Roars prediction.
Hi guys, Roars here for predictions for the American Grand Prix. I think Marc Marquez is going to win. Oh wait, no, that's bikes, isn't it? Anyway, Lewis Hamilton will be on pole. He'll win as well. And then I think just to rub salt in the wounds of Caterham, if they still exist, Guitar Hero Gutierrez is going to rock his way to 10th. Anyway, enjoy the race, guys, if there's still any cars by the time it gets there. Have fun. See ya.
He keeps saving his star power and using it during the verse, and I keep telling him, Gutierrez, save your star power for the solo when there's lots of notes and you'll kill it. But
no. Well, you'll need it. You need it to get you through. Save your mushrooms to the end.
Final audio prediction this week from Cody in the US.
Hey guys, excuse this if it's noisy, but I'm driving right now and I am using hands-free, so I'm not breaking the law. But I am kind of disappointed in myself because I didn't call in the last two races. I got really busy because people decided to invade my life and not give me time to make a recording. But I'm disappointed because I chose Sergio Perez for the two races before Japan, and he didn't finish 10th. And then in Japan and in Russia, he did both races. And I probably would have picked Lewis Hamilton to win, because I'm a Lewis Hamilton fanboy. And for the US Grand Prix, I think it's going to be him. on pole. I think he's going to win the race because he's a beast and he's already won that race. And I'm just going to stick with Sergio Perez again and finishing 10th. I mean, for it to happen three times in a row is probably really unlikely, but that's my prediction.
Cody, I think you've unlocked the secret here. You keep predicting Perez and he doesn't finish 10th, and in the weeks you don't predict, he does finish 10th. So he is toying with you. That's the only logical explanation.
Well, I think you've got to stop, you know, maybe you should start telling Perez that you haven't predicted him.
Yeah, do that.
And then secretly tell us, and then maybe he will come 10th.
Make up a code and then say, when I predict Ricardo is going to come 10th, it secretly means Perez. Don't make it too complicated though, because we're not very smart.
No, we're real dumb cuffs.
We're onto the predictions podium now. This is the 3-2-1 for who picked pole, win, and 10th this week. The three best predictions. You want to know who came third?
Definitely, Rod. Quick, tell me.
It's a squashed up third step, because we've got Jonette Momomoto and Karen Vinter both on the third step. Oh. Hamilton and Button/Magnussen. So they each picked a McLaren driver. They split the difference, 8th and 12th.
Well, nice work. Well, they're two of our favourite predictors.
I don't know that either of them have been on the podium before. I might be wrong.
No, that's all right.
But yeah, absolutely. Regulars all. Second place with Hamilton and Grosjean. Grosjean came 11th, so you're getting really close. Andrew Rogaska, and he's always there or thereabouts.
Oh, he doesn't know how to predict badly.
No, just literally physically can't do it.
Yeah, he's all about it.
This week's top step with predictions of Hamilton and Verne. Incoherent Gus. He wasn't incoherent at all. He was so coherent.
Fantastic. Well done, Incoherent Gus.
Big win for Gussie, you. I think that's your first G-Man. Time on the podium too.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, where else to be than the top?
Where else would you be? But while we're speaking of predictions, while we're speaking of racing, I'm going to send you a special little surprise now. You should get an email in just a second.
Oh, really?
Audio surprise that I want you to listen to.
Let me open up my email.
It's Melbourne Cup week end here in Melbourne. We probably mentioned that. We got a nice holiday. Sorry, Ararat, all the rest of it. Obviously, I was thinking, how can we get in on this Melbourne Cup action? What can we do? Like, there's about 10 races throughout the day. Melbourne Cup is the biggest one. And I was like, how great would it be if we could get Super License to sponsor one of these races? I looked into it, but you never guess. It's really expensive.
Oh, what, like $500, $600?
Oh, even more. I think it's upwards of like $700.
Well, you know, if we do a Kickstarter, that's going to be one of the stretch goals.
Maybe next year. But what I came up with, I thought if we can't sponsor a real race, I thought we might sponsor a fake race.
And they're all lined up and ready to jump in the Super License F1 podcast stakes.
Wow.
Here's the lights. Five lights. And we're off and racing. Rosberg gets a good start and covers off his teammate Hamilton heading into turn one. Sergio Perez makes contact with Raikkonen. He's out of the race and we've got a safety car early on here in Austin. Meanwhile in the midfield, Jeff and Gutierrez look a little too quick behind the safety car. They'll be visiting the steward's office a little later on. Well, we're back up and racing now, and Ricciardo is the man on the move, fending off a challenge from Raikkonen and overtaking Magnussen with a huge speed advantage. And now he's told to close the gap to the willies. He does as he's told, and the early pit stop pays dividends for the Australian. He works his way up back through the pack. Rosberg and Hamilton both pit without incident. Further back, Alonso and Button are fighting for position and for a seat with McLaren next year. Alonso is hit by nose, leaving Button in his dust. Back at the front, it's Hamilton charging now, making full use of DRS and charging towards victory, making an overtake from way back. He pulls out a gap now. There's no doubt the Brit has all the momentum behind him now. At the back, Button is bunching up the field. Drivers moving everywhere and leaving the track, and the conditions fall away from them now. It's like happy hour at a barbecue here in the Super License F1 podcast stakes, with drivers and cars weaving all over the track. It's pure mayhem at the back of the pack. Maldonado tries his best to hit something but can't manage to get it done, and Hamilton crosses the line for his 10th victory of the year. Rosberg takes second place. Third is the Australian Daniel Ricciardo. Hamilton has one hand on the cup now, while Rosberg is in a different building completely, locked in a cupboard with only a dim bowl for company.
That is the greatest. Where? How? Why?
Have you heard of that website Fiverr, where you pay someone $5 to do something?
Yes.
I paid someone $5 to read that out in the style of a horse race.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Came out pretty good. Came out pretty good. He did message me though saying, I hope I pronounced all the names right. I mean, he got close on most of them.
He did pretty
close
well.
Enough. Close
he
enough.
He did
yeah.
very well. Oh man, I loved that. He went the extra mile. Or should I say 3.2 kilometers?
Yeah. Well, that sounds about right.
I just thought
it might spice things up and give it a bit of a Melbourne Cup flavor.
Look, we've been together for a long time, Rod, and I'm getting, the seven-year itch, and spicing up our relationship is important.
The seven-furlong itch.
Oh, great. Well, do you feel like talking about the race now?
Do we need to? I mean, that covers all of the race. We could pretty much put that out every week.
That was everything, right?
What do you want to talk about? What do you want to talk about from the race?
Look, I kind of want to talk about how good Rosberg's start was. That was pretty good. Yeah, but how poor Daniel Ricciardo's start was.
Yeah, so why does he keep having poor starts?
Yeah, well, he pretty much took all of the credit, negative credit, the blame this weekend is the word I was looking for. He was like, when they replayed the start, basically, he spins the tires and then over revs it, misses his gear change, spin the tires again in second, and he's just like, he's never. Oops. It's like he's never driven a Formula One car off the start before. But you know, maybe one day he just knows that regardless of how well he starts, the Mercedes are probably going to win unless they have a problem. So he can muck up his start.
That's true. I mean, the story seems to be throughout this whole season, more or less, Mercedes qualify really well and take first and second. And then Red Bull qualify a little bit further back and gain places during the race. And Williams qualify maybe a little bit further forward and fall back in the race.
Yeah, and strategy lets him down.
Yeah. I mean, that's a gross oversimplification, but that seems to be more or less what happens.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose Sutil bumps into Perez and then basically like runs into Raikkonen at the same time and just basically rebounds off about three different people. He got it so wrong. He just went so deep into the corner and then just went, I guess I'll just use everybody as walls.
Yeah. I mean, at first it looked like a legitimate, skillful overtaking move. But, I mean, he kind of blocks out one driver. And then he said something in an interview like, I can't believe Raikkonen was slowing down so much. It's like, well, yeah, you were going through a hairpin turn. Like, what did you think he was going to do?
Yeah, that's right. You know, when you have to rely too much on, like, that's always the problem with these starts, right? Going into those first few corners is that everybody's sort of expecting everybody else to do things. And it's hard enough thinking about your own Formula One race, let alone everybody else's. So you can't really be guessing other people's driving. The Perez of this season hasn't really, from what I can remember, been making that many mistakes, that kind of error. He's been a little bit more consistent than that.
Well, I mean, he had the big accident with Massa in Canada, which he got the blame for. I mean, I know I don't see it necessarily the way most people do, but I mean, that's the other incident that came to mind. And I think he's kind of flown under the radar a little bit because Hülkenberg has got, I think he's got like double the points that Perez has. But Hülkenberg has had a pretty quiet, pretty disappointing year.
Yeah, exactly. It's very weird. So, yeah, and poor Sutil, you know, he didn't do anything wrong and just came out with nothing, just broken car.
When he looked so promising and he qualified, got into Q3, promise of at least a couple of points. All he had to do was hold station and he would have scored points. And there's a good chance he would have jumped maybe another place or two.
Yeah, exactly.
All wiped off in the first lap.
Yeah, all gone. So, yeah, that sucks. Safety car, a few people jump into pits, including Sebastian Vettel, who started in the pit lane, came in and was like, I'm going to switch tyres and see if I can go right to the end. Of course, he didn't. He ended up using five sets of tyres.
Yeah. I didn't understand that strategy at all. I don't understand why anybody is pitting.
Well, maybe they're like, well, we're already at the back. Let's get some new tyres anyway. Like, it's a free pit stop.
But they're only one lap old.
I don't know.
I don't get it at all.
I don't understand it either. They're paid the big bucks to do these dumb things anyway. So, I suppose the next major thing was that I loved, which is the first of two of Ricciardo's fantastic overtakes, was on Magnussen. You know, he just seemed to surprise Magnussen completely and take him on the inside, I think. Just sort of out of the blue, which is what he did on Alonso after the restart as well. He sort of cuts in on the inside and then sort of just goes, I'm just going to take a really weird line through this hairpin corner. Oh, God, there's two Williams right there in front of me taking the corner. Like, he could have just T-boned Massa straight through. But thank God, like, he was slowing down enough. And then Alonso tries to catch him sort of around the outside later and is, like, spinning his tyres, trying to catch up. Because I just don't think he was expecting the move at all. And Ricciardo's done this a few times this year. It's just... gone, I'm just going to make up a new line through there, or make up an overtaking maneuver and plonk my car on the next apex, and hopefully you won't get past.
And the commentators called out what's fast becoming Ricardo's move, which is sell the dummy on the outside and then duck in on the inside.
Yeah.
So Ricardo, really good. Obviously, he jumped a few of those midfield drivers. He you know, ahead of him then on the racetrack was the Williams. And, you know, Massa finished ahead of Bottas this week, which is a good thing for him, I guess, because Bottas has had his number lately. But again, we saw pit stop strategies sort of hurt Williams, because the first time through, they pitted Massa and then Ricardo was like, well, I'll pit too. And Bottas pitted a few laps later and Ricardo managed to jump him because he came in earlier.
Yeah,
and
then the same thing happened.
Yeah, the same thing happened again later on, I'm pretty sure. And it's like,
it happened immediately as well. It happened. So yeah, he got Bottas the first time. And then when Massa came in, Ricardo had come in the lap earlier, puts in an amazing lap on the fresh tires and gets Massa on the first turn out of the pits. And I can't believe that the team fell for the, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Like, come on, guys.
100%. I don't understand. You have to think about more than just your strategy, and you have to look at who you're racing in the race. Your main competitor is Daniel Ricciardo, and you're making it easy for him.
Yeah, exactly. You're making it really, you're reacting instead of being proactive. So, really proactive. It's disappointing from Williams. I just feel like Daniel Ricciardo had no business being third this week. The Williams were faster on the straights. It looked like they had a little bit better downforce in some of the other parts. They just couldn't get it together again. But, you know, move on.
Move on. Poor old Nico Hülkenberg retires his car and...
told to turn it off.
Gave him a rap a minute ago, but obviously he had to retire this week. Pulls over and does this thing that Formula One cars do now. If you're on anything like a hill, it starts to roll back. He needed, I don't know if the marshals had bricks, but it needed some bricks behind those tires.
Well, there's that great shot of he looks like he's kicking the car, but he's actually just stopping it from rolling backwards with his foot. Like he's preventing it from rolling away completely.
He can't do anything more.
Yeah, well, maybe he should have stopped it somewhere better. Like, they got on the radio and were like, hey, so the engine's fucked. Quick, pull it over and turn it off and just make it go away, please.
Yeah, I'm sure that if he could have gotten up over that hill, he would have. I don't think it was his choice to pull over at that exact moment, but...
No, that's right.
I don't know.
What about... We to and fro'd a little bit about this on Twitter, actually. Gutierrez, Maldonado, and Verne all got 5-second stop-and-go penalties for speeding behind the safety car. Jensen Button was also accused or under investigation, but then they looked at his wily old face and they were like, well, we can't be angry at you. And didn't give him one.
I know how I feel. Do you want to lay a foundation, though?
Well, I suppose the foundation personally is that you don't want anybody... Like, there are speed rules under a safety car to prevent things like what happened to... Jules Bianchi, you know, they set a speed limit and they say, don't go that fast because it's not safe to go that fast. And do you want to give your side of the issue?
I understand where that's coming from, but I just think if you have a safety car on the track, that's slowing down the first car. And then every car behind them can't overtake the car in front of them. So by definition, the safety car is slowing down every car. And if no car is going faster than the car in front of them, there's no reason for any car to be speeding, and B, no reason why you would penalize any car for speeding if they're not overtaking the car in front of them, which they can't do.
But Gutierrez must have been going faster than the car in front of him. Otherwise, the car in front of him would have had a penalty as well.
Well, one thing that might happen, I guess, is you're trying to warm up your tires, or you just slow down and you make a massive gap behind the car in front of you, and then you speed up to catch up to him. But you're not meant to fall more than 10 car lengths behind the car in front of you anyway.
Yeah, but that must have been it. That, because there's no, if Gutierrez wasn't going faster than the guy in front of him, he would have caught him. So he would never have been speeding. So all three of them had to be speeding at some point.
Well,
it shouldn't be tricky for them to just be like, hey, here are the rules. You go this fast. Don't go faster than that. Like, it's not hard.
I don't know that it was penalty worthy. And I also just don't... I mean, the whole area of safety cars and the rules and procedures, I just think they need to throw it out and start again. Because I just think it is one of the worst areas of regulation in the sport at the moment. And that's a big call because there's a lot of stupid regulation.
Definitely.
But why there is so many problems with it.
Why can't they just put on a speed limit like they have for the pit lane?
I was thinking that too. I mean, the pit lane is very, very slow. I don't know if that's probably too slow, but they could do something like that to say you can't do more than, like, I think it's 60 k's in the pit lane. Why can't you do 120 max?
On
the track, something like that. I've had that thought too, and I don't think it's stupid. But then the thing is, if you're going to limit the speed like that, you don't even need an actual car.
Exactly. You don't need you should just have a virtual safety car then.
Yeah. And then you could also, you know, they're talking about this virtual safety car for yellow flag areas. It'd be like that, except for the whole track. So it could just be a fundamental change to the way that you actually implement not just a safety car, but all safety scenarios.
Yeah, because that way no one really has to lose their places. No one loses their gaps. It doesn't become one of those strategy things where it's like, oh, this is a safety car, quick, people come into pit stops and people, you know, we're all going to bunch up so you catch them on the restart. It's like, no, the gaps stay the same.
Oh, well, I guess they could.
But they would. You know, if you caught a safety car, there was an accident, everybody suddenly has to go 120 k's now, the gaps would stay exactly the same.
Yeah, but maybe it's a good thing that the race does bunch up and we get that exciting restart. I don't know. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, if you were winning, though, you wouldn't be happy about that. It's like the rubber banding in Mario Kart. Like, if you're winning, you hate it.
Never happy about that.
No. But, you know, it just reminds me of when you go go-karting and there's someone's turned around on the track and they put the yellow flashing light on, you have to slow down.
Yeah. You know, although the first time I went, there was this, you know, guy that fancied himself a bit of a pro. And he went, yeah. When you see the yellow light, that means catch up to the guy in front of you and then slow down. I was like,
Which is exactly what Gutierrez, Maldonado, and Verne all thought with the safety car. So
yeah, they're doing go-kart.
Thanks for wrecking your own argument. I'm just joking.
But speaking about contrary behavior, perhaps, I've got Jensen Button. So this is actually pretty funny, I reckon. The team calls him in and says, Jensen, you're going to be in the pits next lap. Get ready. And he's like, okay, no worries, because I'm fighting these guys and I'd love to get away from them.
Yeah, and I'm really slow right now.
They radio him and they go, Jensen, I know what we said, but don't come in this lap. Come in the next lap. Don't come in this lap. And he's like, I guess that's okay. And then he gets overtaken by a couple of cars and Magnussen comes in. That's why they told him not to come in.
Yeah.
So then the next time around, after a couple laps, like, okay, Jensen, this time we want you to come in. And he's like, geez, guys, are you sure? Do you want to think about it some more?
Yeah.
I thought it was
I'm only lapping 2 seconds a lap slower than everybody else. There's a train of like 9 cars behind me. Don't even worry about it, guys.
3 cars behind where I was before. Don't even worry about it. My tires are like, you know, there's basically metal on the asphalt here.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's right. It was mental. He's just so calm, cool, and collected during the races that he can even think about that kind of stuff. Like, whenever they do, like, any of those really experienced drivers, like, they just seem like they can have, like, they must just be talking to them nonstop the whole time, like, just having conversations the whole time.
Some people thought that he was whinging a little bit, but I didn't see it that way.
Nah, it was a little bit passive-aggressive. It's fun.
It was a bit of fun. Yeah, exactly.
That's fun. You know what wasn't passive-aggressive?
Yeah, go on.
The awesome tete-a-tete between Button and Alonso, laps 21 and 22. Ooh,
that was aggressive-aggressive.
It was full on. Man, oh man. It just seemed to go on and on and on and on. Like, it just shows how closely matched McLaren and Ferrari sort of are right now. You know,
that was the kind of battle that I was hoping the Mercedes drivers were going to have. We'll get to that maybe a bit later. But yeah, I wasn't sure whether Alonso was just sort of toying with him a little bit or what. Because, I mean, those two are basically driving for a McLaren seat next year.
Yeah, exactly. And it looked like, you know, the first time he made Alonso sort of made a couple of dances around Jensen, he was sort of looking for it looked like he was looking for the perfect gap, as opposed to sort of pulling a Daniel Ricciardo and sort of, or Kimi Raikkonen, sort of forcing it to work.
Yeah.
It looked like he was waiting for the perfect opportunity. But then when he did get past and we're like, oh yeah, now he's going to skip up the road. Oh, no, Jensen's still right on his gearbox and is going to take the place back. Yeah. You know, and then they were just taking different lines into every single corner. Like, they just created a new racetrack out of the blue. It was brilliant. You know, it's a real shame.
I can't decide whether these two guys being teammates would be the best idea or the worst idea.
I think if they were teammates, they wouldn't have a problem with it. It's just that they're both fighting, you know, they're... Both of them probably feel like they're in exactly the same position. We are two of the best drivers on the grid, and our cars shouldn't be this bad. Our cars should be way better than this.
That's right.
But they aren't. You know, how is Williams beating us every week?
Yeah, no, it just shouldn't be like that. But talking about the two best drivers on the grid in the two best cars in the grid, we've got Rosberg and Hamilton. You mentioned that Rosberg had a great start. I totally agree. I mean, he got off the line cleanly. He cut off Hamilton a little bit coming into turn one when he needed to and defended. And for half of the race, he looked golden.
Yeah, he got out of DRS zone as well. Like, you didn't really think that was going to happen. And then, you know, Hamilton started pulling it back. And then you know, God, by lap 25, we've still got, like, Hamilton, sort of the five laps before that had gone, okay, the gap's out to about 1.5 seconds or something. I'm going to start reeling that back in. And then as soon as he got in the DRS zone, he was almost half a second faster. Like, it was incredible. Yeah. It's like he switched on the go button. Like, yeah. He just went, oh, yeah, no, I'm the best.
The differential was huge.
Oh, and just, we haven't seen just a really nice, clean overtake, but that's exactly what it was. You know, Rosberg just got, Hamilton just got straight past, down the straight, out of nowhere. Like, so much speed difference. It doesn't even necessarily have to outbrake Rosberg or anything like that. It just sort of pushes him off the racing line a little bit, cuts in the corner, job done. And then
it was really neat and tidy. I was watching the Russia overtake attempt the other day, and you can see Rosberg try and get as far in front as he can before he starts to brake. But Hamilton just knows that you start to brake and just sort of nudge them over to the side. Then you've got the line, you can floor it, and you get through. Yeah, and it was just neat and tidy, really well done.
Yeah, it's because Hamilton knows. Because even if he doesn't get the job fully done on that corner, maybe not even the next corner, he's going to have the upper hand for the next corner after that.
Yeah.
You know, so Hamilton's racing. You know, I think worth congratulating him on how well he's racing. You know, he's picking his opportunities. He's not trying to do it all in the first corner, which is what I would sort of expect him to do. And he's just gone, this championship is mine, and it's mine to lose now. And I'm just going to do everything I possibly can to not end a race out of the points. You know, just keep finishing as high as I can. I'm not going to wreck a race. I'm just going to make the right decisions at the right time. And he's making Rosberg look slow on race day. Like, because Hamilton then just stretched out 2 seconds and just went, that's race done.
Mm. Rosberg said something after the race along the lines of, I was trying to get a bit of extra errs, and I wanted to fine tune it by switching it to a little knob that I have rather than just hitting a button or something. And he said, if I just left it on the button, I could have hit it when I needed it and it would have been fine.
Yeah,
he overthought it. I just was fuddling around. And I mean, really, he just blew it. And I mean, once Hamilton got ahead, Hamilton pulled away, like it was like 4 seconds at one point or something. So when Hamilton turned the wick up, you know, he just blew him away.
Yeah, I was sort of expecting Rosberg maybe to come back at him because the cars are almost identical. That you would expect, okay, maybe Hamilton's pushed his fuel and his engine mapping up a little bit and used up a little bit more of his tires. But no, it was just job done. Rosberg never looked like getting past him. And personally, at this point, Rosberg really turned it on to get P1. But now Hamilton just knows he just has to finish, like, you know, basically in the top 2-3 for the rest of the... Well, no, sorry, that's not right. Let me rephrase that. Hamilton just needs to know, he knows that he just needs to keep the pressure on. As long as he's there or thereabouts in the races are there for Hamilton to win. It's not all going to be won on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I resigned myself a while ago to the fact that this is just Hamilton's championship now. And I really think the only thing that's going to cost him is if he breaks down a couple of times. And then in which case, everyone will be sad, including me, because he doesn't deserve that.
Well, if he breaks down in Abu Dhabi, if he breaks down in Abu Dhabi and he's only 49 points in front, he could still lose. You know, that is the worst thing about double points, is that as we've said in the past, it's just going to put an asterisk against Rosberg's win.
Although I noticed Rosberg, he earlier in the year, he was against double points, and now his stance is kind of softening and he's starting to be like, well, you know, that's the rules and it's the same rules for everybody. And it's like, all of a sudden, it's starting to appeal to him a lot more. Anyway, that's enough of those two. What else have we got that we can talk about from the race? It really just gets to the end, and there's about six cars at the end that are all... They're all running out of grip. They're going off the track. You know, almost every second corner, there's someone going off the track. And it's just mayhem. People are swapping places everywhere. There's penalties throwing up left, right, and center. No one can make sense of anything. I'm not ashamed to admit that I just was completely lost. And I just threw my hands up and went, I'll work this out later.
Grosjean gets in the radio. It's like, my car doesn't steer. And you can see it. It's pretty much every high speed corner he comes into, overshoots it, goes wide, ends up on the AstroTurf, comes back on. We've got AstroTurf just like peeling off the track.
Yeah.
Which people have been saying, I saw on Twitter, that's been happening for the last 2 months at COTA. You know, they race NASCARs there. They've raced other GT stuff there. Like, it's just been peeling up. Like, why they even use that? Like, it looks like it's stapled down, basically, or super glued, instead of just, you know, maybe actual grass. But yeah, Grosjean, Vern, Maldonado, and then Sebastian Vettel's like, well, I don't like the looks of this, but I'm going to go in for my fifth set of tyres, my fourth pit stop, go and get fresh tyres, come out and just lap around about 3 seconds faster than everybody else. Yeah. And he caught, who did he catch in the end? He got by, I think, Button, Grosjean, Vern, Maldonado, and then there's like, there's no way he'll catch Magnussen, and then caught Magnussen and was right. He finished 0.5 of a second behind Fernando Alonso. Like, last corner stuff. It was incredible.
This is the kind of thing where they were talking about the strategy before the race, going, you know, three stops is actually a little bit faster than two stops, but only if you are in a car that can overtake the two stoppers, if you have to. But then you look at someone like Vettel, who he pits in the first lap, pits with about five laps to go, and you think, why are you making all these stops? It's crazy. But
it got him, yeah, it pushed him well into the points.
Yeah.
Like, there was there was a point at the start where he's just like, he was lapping like 145s or something with the Gutierrez's of the world. And you're like, but this car's way faster than that. And then it just had to wait for his time in the race, you know? It was huge.
So it was mayhem at the back. We've covered all the main points, I think, all the main battles throughout the track, throughout the race. Do you have any other main points you want to touch on?
What about Jeb's overtake on, was it Grosjean? But Grosjean had sort of decided that he was going to be overtaking, I can't remember. Sorry, that's completely wrong. So he slots it in on the one of the tight corners, and then just sort of Grosjean sort of turns into him, and Jeb just sort of like they bump, which is where I think the steering on Grosjean's car gets broken.
It could have been.
It looks fine on the first replay, and then you watch the close up, and it just looks like he's come in and just like bumped somebody out of the way, like he's just gone in, thrown in the hip and shoulder, and then sort of kept turning it around. I just don't think Jeb was expecting Grosjean. Grosjean made a move quite late. And Jeb was trying to make the move from really far back. And once you're committed to taking the really tight inside line into that corner, there's nowhere for you to go. You know, there's nothing you can do. Mm. But, you know, it was a bit of argy-bargy, but we like to see that.
Yeah. No, I felt like overall the race probably wasn't particularly exciting. There's the story of the leaders that kind of played out with Rosberg and Hamilton. There was this crazy scrap at the end. It looked like Hungry Hungry Hippos, where everyone was just trying to get as many marbles as possible. Mm. That's kind of the story of the race for me.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. And it sets it up nicely for Interlagos.
Yeah.
Brazil.
Two races left. So, I mean the good thing is that the Drivers' Championship is probably going to go down to the wire, because I think Hamilton hasn't wrapped it up yet and can't until, even if he wins and Rosberg scores no points, it's going to go down to Abu Dhabi.
Look, there's a chance that I could win the Drivers' Championship right now.
Yeah. If you wanted the championship that goes all the way, you're getting it. And it's going to be one of those two. Ricciardo is now out of contention. He can't win it. But, he's still had a fantastic year. And it's not to say he can't win a couple of races, but he just mathematically, he can't be champion.
Well, and that's what's difficult about, like, thinking about this season. I'm sure we'll get to this when we do our season review. But, you know, thinking about the best drivers of the year, quite often Formula One fans and journalists are here as well, are quite reluctant to give it to the guys with the best race cars. You know, it's all about the underdog, the guy who didn't quite have the right car, but still pulled a couple of wins and, like, 8 podiums, which is what Daniel Ricciardo's done. But you'd be hard-pressed to go past, you know, Lewis Hamilton's second half of the season to show that, you know, he's pulled this title completely out of the fire.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it's time to move on from this race. And there's going to be another race in another few days anyway. So don't you worry. If you love hearing us talk about races, it's not going to be long before we're talking about the next one.
And if you don't, why are you here?
Yeah. But it's time to move on to some other stuff. And I think what we might do next is get to my second little treat that I have for you this week, which was a little discussion I did with Mr. Trent Price.
Who's Trent Price?
Trent Price. He's been around. He's been around the world. He knows his stuff. He writes about Formula One, Formula E, the F1, FE, WEC, lots of letters, basically. He knows about all the letters.
What about WWF?
You throw a bunch of letters in the air. Yeah, exactly. WWF. If you throw a bunch of letters in the air, he probably knows about it. But he went over to Japan recently and caught up with a bunch of drivers and was talking about all of them. And obviously that was right when the driver market contention was right up in the air and it was becoming a hot topic. So he's put out some of his thoughts. But when I talked to him, I thought I might start with asking him about his impressions of Kevin Magnussen, his overall impressions and what he likes about him and what he thinks might happen next year.
His mindset, he's hard to gauge, Kevin. He's fairly straight down the line. He doesn't like to embellish too much about anything. The only time I got any kind of rise out of Kevin was when I tried to be a little bit sneaky and throw in the odd question about, so you must be really excited about working with Honda next year. His face lit up and went, yeah, but I'm not meant to talk about that.
Definitely gets a bit touchy. And I mean, he I think he says something like, as long as I'm at McLaren, I'll be happy. So do you think that's looking likely at this stage?
It is, but now Jensen's making it really hard for McLaren to make a decision by putting in some good performances towards the end of the year. And Jensen's funny like that. He tends to either need a carrot to perform or someone to give him a kick up the bum, as in a really good driver. You know, obviously, when Lewis was there, he stepped up his game. It's funny, when he was at Honda with Rubens, Rubens always seemed to have the upper hand when the car wasn't so good. All of a sudden, when there's a sniff of, oh, gee, I could do really well on this, he steps up his game again. It just seems to, you know, peaks and troughs with Jensen. So it's hard. It's a really hard decision with McLaren to make. You know, but then, again, the same thing could happen with Magnussen. If someone like Alonso joined the team, then Kevin could, you know, turn up the wick as well, just by virtue of having a guy with that amount of talent next to him.
Yeah, he's clearly young. He's clearly quick. I think if Alonso goes to McLaren, they might be well served to stick with him just to spread their skill set out a little bit, because, you know, all of the benefits and the experience that Alonso has, you know, Button has that as well. But I think, I mean, one thing I've been critical about Magnussen is his sort of defensive skills. I think he's been a bit reckless a few times. How do you see that reputation that Magnussen's getting as a bit of a reckless defender?
He's not overly reckless. Yeah, I mean, certainly not in the Maldonado sense. You know, there's a big gap between those two. They've been very marginal decisions too,
sure.
You know, that he's been on the receiving end of. And he's admitted himself that, look, I've sort of done the wrong thing. I've overstepped it. I'll learn to rein it in a bit. And look at Romain Grosjean, and certainly he wasn't even in that vein when he had a really tough year. I think it was in 2012.
Yep.
How he turned it around in 12 months' time. It's a lot easier to rein back a quicker driver than it is to get a slow one and tell him to go quick. You know, I'd rather be in that position than try to, you know, like Sergio Perez, you know, to change his style is probably a little bit harder, probably because it's so subtle, the subtleties, to ingrain. But with Kevin, I think he's got a big brain on the guy too. You know, it won't take him long to rein that in.
Okay, so you think his helmet's mostly full of brains and they're worth scooping out as much as they can?
Pretty much.
Got it. I felt the other good thing about you chatting to Magnussen was that you got to update your avatar. You got to replace the one of you with Robert Kubica with Magnussen, just to keep it fresh.
Just to update it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of keeping it fresh, there was a little bit of news that broke today about, obviously, Caterham. They've gone into administratorship, but there was a few things that you'd written a few months ago that you're now claiming that you called it. You've got your hand up in the air saying, I called it, banked. And why don't you run us through what's been going on?
Well, I guess it was July, like 3 months ago, and this was when Colin Collis was starting to become involved in the team, when he was already involved in Forza Rossa's, I guess, bid to become a Formula One team as well. It's like, well, what the hell's this guy doing? How can he have his fingers in both pies? I also had a friend who was working at Caterham at the time. He was since left only about a week or so ago. There's all this talk about, you know, everything's as per normal. Things are being built, parts are being built. But, you know, when you speak to the people on the shop floor, they tell you, well, hang on, I haven't been asked to design anything. And so you sort of wonder, well, what's Coles' position here, you know? And then not long after that, we learnt that Romanian footballer.
Well, at first it was reported that he was a janitor, and someone else said, no, he's not a nobody, he's a former footballer.
he wasn't a Cork and the Juice Pig song. he eventually, Koja Karu.
That's a tough one to get your tongue around.
It is, and I won't intend trying to do that again. but yeah, he started work as the cleaner at Caterham. And then the team principal, Manfredi, decided, hey, you know, but you look like a go-getter. I like the way you're cleaning up that vomit. How about you, you know, own our team, you know?
And by clean up the vomit, you mean our car.
Yeah, pretty much. Just looking at it like that, you sort of wonder, well, hang on, this is very much a Mel Brooks producer's style arrangement. You know, let's try and run this team into the ground, and like you would with a bank trying to take over a small company. Just let's liquidate all the assets and then take what we can get. I guess the biggest alert was in Suzuka when Freddie said that. Well, he was sort of painted into a corner when everyone was saying, "Well, how all these assets are getting retrieved by debt collectors," you know, and it's all. You know, nostalgia,
memorabilia.
How was it simulated nostalgia? And then he sort of just blurted out, "Well, you know, our license is our biggest asset." And then the penny dropped. And then, of course, the ex-footballer, ex-cleaner, in court proceedings, because he went once the team was put in the hands of administrators, he had to make a statement. And then basically came out and said that, well, my purpose was to construct cars for Caterham and Forza Rosa. Oh, right.
So it's red flag. Red flag.
Yeah, red flag. So it looks like that's the way it's going to be happening. But you know, if you go back at even last month's F1 Racing interview with Colin Coles, you look at some of the statements he was making, and they just read for like almost like horror. Slasher reading, you know. It's not my team. I'd rather I'm supplying equipment. There's a desire to put Romania in a good light, you know. The perception is, you know, we're a country with good people, but the perception is that they think of criminals who are robbing and stealing, you know. He goes on to say, what was it? When everything is fine, I will disappear, and the new owners will come and be presented. You know?
Oh dear.
You can see the cape just around his face. Yeah. It just disappears.
And he's standing in a pentagram with candles on each point at that stage, I think.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, dear. I would have liked to have been in that press conference just to see the look on the interviewer's face to see what he did.
Apart from
fill his pants.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It very much dances around the issues. You can tell that you've been granted this and you're only going to write so much. You know, I sort of feel... sorry for the guy, you know, in that position, but certainly the open press conference with Manfredi and Suzuka was, I've never seen anything so heated. Some of the journalists were literally just hands on chairs, banging them on the ground as they were screaming at Manfredi, because I think they all know that this is a team full of people who have, you know, mortgages and families. You know, these people are going to suffer. And, you know, and some of them, you know, obviously they were dismissed without pay or back pay. And some of them were just left just purely for their own mental preservation. Yeah. Hopefully they can move on to better things.
We've got a bit of a problem at F1 at the moment where there's going to be a bit of a ghost town down the back end of the field. I can't actually remember off the top of my head whose pit box is in front of Mauritius, but they're going to have a pretty sweet entry to their box this weekend. Do you think the cars will make it back for Abu Dhabi as they sort of claim, or and what do you think of the chances that we'll be running three cars ever?
Well, I suppose with Mauritius, you've got to remember with them being put in the hands of administrators, it's not the be all and end all in that, you know, they're completely finished. This will, in a way, protect them from some of the problems that they've already been having. So there has been talk about a couple of investors, one of them being Max Chilton's father. Which is an interesting one, because I was talking to Max last year at Suzuka, and he was saying at that stage, you know, if he was going to have a drive next year, it was reliant on about 20 investors that he had to all decide whether or not they were going to still fund him. So I would assume that those same investors are in cahoots, is probably not the right word, but yeah, with his father.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of red tape to sort of get through before any of that happens, and it's not going to happen very quickly. I'd be very surprised if they did, if they were on the grid at Abu Dhabi. But the weird thing about this whole three car thing is that it's reliant on a lot of different things, because the clause with the I guess Caterham and Mauricio, they're allowed to lose, sorry, and miss two races.
Yep.
But the whole third car thing, there's a 60-day leeway thing, so that's going to cover the rest of the year anyway. So I wouldn't expect those cars, you know, third cars to come into place. And then you've got people like Eric Bullier saying, "Oh, we need a 6-month lead time of the week."
Yeah,
car, which is bullshit. They've got a car.
They could run on next week if they wanted to. But it also just seems like even if we lost two teams, with the knowledge that there's at least another one or two that could pick up the slack down the track, I think we're a long way off three cars. We'd have to be down to something like six teams for three cars to be feasible, I reckon.
Pretty much. You know, if they start implementing three cars, you have to do it for the whole grid anyway. Otherwise, it just becomes a bit of a joke. What does that mean for the Constructors' Championship? And then to sort of turn around and say, well, actually, this third car isn't eligible for points in the Constructors' Championship. Try to tell that to the layman who's just watching F1 for the first time, which is basically the audience that Formula One's trying to gain. And every year, they just make it more and more muddied, you know, to confuse them. Especially the American market, you know, because this weekend.
Oh, boy, yeah. This is not a great time for F1 to be marketing itself in the US, that's for sure. I was going to talk about the driver market a little bit, obviously not the big end. I'm more interested in the smaller end because there's a lot of fringe drivers. Doesn't seem like there's a lot of seats available. There's one at Toro Rosso, which is actually a pretty decent seat. Who's your hot tip to end up there?
A lot of people are saying Carlos Sainz Jr. Yeah. And he seems like a good step. Obviously, it's funny with John Ackerman, you know, the policy is, you know, you spend 2-3 years there, then you're done, you move away. I guess from a points point of view, you know, you'd want to keep him, but that's not the reason they're there, unfortunately. So I'd say Sainz is probably the best bet to go in there. He's certainly stepped up his game, you know, whereas, you know, Antonio Felix da Costa, the reason that he didn't progress through that category was because that his mental aptitude just wasn't there or they didn't see it, which is probably the same reason that they've got rid of Jean Eric as well, because it was funny when it was announced that Daniel Kvyat was going to be moving to Red Bull. He didn't even show up for his normal press open media session after qualifying. And you can understand that, you know, that it must have been completely demoralising for the guy to have that happen twice. But at the same time, you sort of wonder if that had happened to Daniel Ricciardo, he would still probably turn up to his open media session. And that's part of the whole process at Red Bull. You know, you need to be able to display those kind of qualities and that resilience, you know, so they can give you a second chance, you know. If Jean-Eric had probably done that, you know, along the way, then maybe he wouldn't be in this position.
It's probably one insult too many after being passed over by Ricciardo and now being passed over for the junior team as well. He must be thinking, how much garbage do I have to have put on my shoulders before I just throw my hands up and say, I'm out, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, you know, he should move to sports cars or something, you know.
Or maybe he could go drive in Formula E, which is what I was going to finish on. This is getting off Formula One a little bit, but what did you think of the opening of the Formula E season, and what do you think its chances are that it can actually keep its momentum going? Because it obviously had this fantastic draw of the opening race and then a big two-month gap between, and it's on the same weekend as the final race of F1. I can't make any sense of it, Trent. Can you explain it for me?
It's funny because the race day was great. Everything went right for them.
Yep.
You know, it was good close racing. It wasn't manufactured, which was probably the big concern there. You know, certainly with a pit stop where you're jumping out of one car and into the other because of the whole battery, you know, they're not energizer bunnies. But, you know, everything went right. It was good close racing. It was an exciting finish. Even before the crash with Prost and Heitfeld, it was still a good race. You know, it would have stood on its own merits. But that was sort of a bonus, I guess, if you will, that made this news pretty much everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
You think, hey, let's capitalize on this and push it as much as we can. But it's just gone radio silent.
Yeah.
You know, for 2 months. You know, and this is a sport which uses or should be using social media to the fore with their whole fan boost thing. You know, they're going to need something special again to get that momentum back up. And you can't rely on it. You know, they could have a dud race.
Absolutely. I mean, the other thing is that the tracks seem to be drawing a bit of attention because they're not particularly interesting looking anyway. They're just a bunch of 90 degree corners. So I'm not sure whether they're trying to appeal to the common man or to the diehard racing fan.
They're trying to appeal to, I guess, any city dwellers and also appeal to the green energy market, you know, which is, I suppose, they're the ones who are going to be buying those cars. But they're trying to bring it to people, you know, in close proximity to cities and whatnot. The circuits themselves may not, I mean, right-angle corners, okay, fine, they look a bit dull, but You see a lot of right-angle corners on the IndyCar street circuit as well, you know. And the cars may not be fast in terms of their top end, but these things are sliding around. They're heavy. The rear is very heavy as well. They squirt around. They're right on the limit. You know, they are touching the walls and mistakes are being made. And it is quite spectacular if you're sort of probably standing on the sidelines. As a motor racing event, you don't see that in Formula One, you know, that sort of on-edge sort of 1970s style balls out kind of qualifying laps. And they've got that, you know. So all the ingredients are definitely there. They've just got to capitalize on it.
I think they've got a couple of great drivers in the series. And I remember that last corner incident between Heidfeld and Prost, it was like it was in slow motion. I just remember Heidfeld had the speed and we were all holding our breath going, please make that move. And he did. And I mean, it was gutsy even before, whether he pulled it off or not, it was a gutsy move. So I think the scene was set for Formula E. I really hope that over the summer we can get a bit of momentum going. By the time Formula One comes back, everyone will be absolutely up and going, and that season will be wrapping up. It is a bit of a problem with the fan boost thing, I think. We've got drivers now joining Twitter, presumably just so that they can try and take advantage of that. And they're saying, you know, fan boost voting is open now, even though the race is a month away. Get on now and start voting for me. Something to embrace social media, but it's another thing to sort of feed the haters and say, well, this is a bit of a silly joke, this Formula E. Look at all the tweets. They're all about fan boost me this, fan boost me up.
Yeah. And I think it was with social media too, is, you know, you have to be authentic. You know, if fans are looking at it and they just see that they're just being used in some way rather than being embraced and spoken to, then they'll turn right off.
Hmm.
And the other thing as well is that in that race in Beijing, fan boost wasn't actually used.
Yeah.
By any of the drivers. So,
bit of a head scratcher.
It is a bit of a head scratcher. I mean, I had someone there who spoke to a few people and they sort of decided maybe it wasn't in the interest in the drivers in terms of sportingness,
sure.
I guess, if you will, to use it, which isn't a good sign either, you know, when your proponents aren't even done. Think it's a good thing.
Well, it could become a bit like cricket where you're seen as an honest person if you know you've got the edge and you walk. If you're genuinely trying to battle for the lead and you go, you know what, I want to win this on merit, I don't want to win this because of a fan boost, I could see somebody not using it and actually getting more credit, you know, lauded on them for that.
Exactly. And I suppose, to be fair as well, the people who were awarded the fan boost were Catherine Legg and Lex Degrassi. When they had it, they weren't really in a position to be using it. I mean, Catherine didn't finish the race anyway. Yeah. So I suppose you can give them a bit of leeway in that regard, but it will become a point. It will become a discussion point somewhere along the line.
I think that it throws up a lot of stories. I think there's obviously a lot of things that you could dig into and get into, and we're talking about social media, so this is perfect. I want you to, if you can, plug all of your stuff, plug eRacing Mag, plug where people can find out everything about you, and get into everything, pick your brain about Formula One and Formula E.
Yep, sure. Well, we're at www.e-racingmag.com. But if you also go to GMAG, eRacing Magazine Newsstand, if you just type that into a search engine, you should be able to find all our back issues as well. And, of course, we're on Twitter, so there's a lot of updates there as well. We've got the Shanghai 6 Hour this weekend. So, yeah, we're covering that. And we've got a guy on the ground there, Frankie Mayo. Frankiest Frankie. He is on the so he was, I think, a few minutes ago, he was interviewing Anthony Davidson for a Chinese documentary crew. So
there you go.
Playing with his, you know, must be cold there. He's got his big flat jacket on. So he's enjoying himself.
What a trooper.
Oh, yeah, he's a good guy, Frankie. He's interviewing Stephen Liu, who's the team principal at China Racing, Formula mm-hmm. Well, who actually also organised the Beijing race. So there's not many team principals, you know, I know who, you know, not only organised the race in a country and managed their own team at the same time. That's a first for me that I know about anyway.
Having said that, they were giving away the final Formula E race for a song because we did start the season and we didn't know exactly where we were going racing for the entire year.
Yeah, and it's been chopping and changing the calendar as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of moving. Oh, now we're in South America, and now we'll go, oh, maybe it's Miami, maybe it's Hong Kong. We can't do it in Hong Kong because one of the delegates there, you know, he won't be able to get out of his garage, you know, if we run the event.
Maybe it's in Adelaide, maybe it's in Traralgon, who knows?
Yeah. Adelaide would be good if they made it probably three times shorter. But, what else? What else? Yeah, you know, that. Facebook. You can find us on Facebook and eRacing Magazine as well. So they're all linked. You know, you can see all the links as well. We're previewing the also the Journey to Le Mans film, which was focused on Jotasport, the LMP2 victory in Le Mans, and they were nice enough to put us on their poster as well for a quote. Oh, wow. So we're good quote hauls. You know, we're enjoying that.
Not bad at all.
Yeah. Can I say that word? Yeah. I won't get all gear hard burger on you.
You're at Real Trent Price. People can read you on Richland F1. Is there anywhere else they can read you?
Yeah. Just at Richland F1 as well. So, yeah, there's a few interviews coming up there. Obviously, we had the Kevin Magnussen. There's a Felipe Massa interview I did in Japan as well. And we've got one coming up next week with Herbie Blash.
Oh, which, fantastic.
Some great quotes from him, which I was surprised about. he's a lovely guy, and he's been up against it in the last couple of weeks as well, certainly. Mm-hmm. This new inquiry going on with Jules, but they'll get through that.
Thanks very much, Trent, for talking to us. One final thing, Hamilton or Rosberg for the championship?
Hamilton, because, you know, the team behind him.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks very much, buddy.
Thanks, mate. No worries.
See ya. You can check out Trent on Twitter. We'll put all the links to everything in there. We mentioned the Kevin Magnussen interview that he did, so I'll provide links for all those as well. Check the show notes, check our Twitter, check everywhere, because it's going to be out there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Get behind Trent, everybody.
Yeah, he's great. That's race discussion done. And I need a bit of a mental break.
You seem pooped. Well, you know what, Rod? You know what's really good to give your brain a rest? Uh-huh. Is to do a super quiz.
Get the answer out so I can keep moving. Come on, come on, come on. Chop, chop, chop.
Quiz.
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 Questions. Super quiz. Isn't it the opposite of a quiz, is to keep your mind active? What you're saying is that I can take a little bit of a breather and just let the answers come to me rather than me working for it.
Engage your semi-consciousness, your unconsciousness. You know, look, Rod, all I can tell you about this quiz is you're going to need to remember stuff from the past and not remember stuff about the future, which you can't do because you can't remember the future. Anyway, this week's quiz is on teams that are no longer with us.
Teams that are no longer with us.
Because we've had a week of, you know, administratorships.
Yeah.
Teams going away, teams arriving. So I thought we'd do a quiz on some teams that are no longer here.
Okay. I give myself a 50-50 chance going
away. Okay. Well, the good thing is you don't really have to know anything necessarily about the teams. You just need to know the teams.
Cool.
Okay. So it's very team focused. So let's just jump right in. I think, I like to lob you an easy one to start with. So, now, and also, let me preface this quiz. Whilst doing my research, it can be a little bit difficult to be 100% sure because of the way teams are structured with different owners and sponsorship and who owns them around which teams exist and which teams no longer exist. I've tried to be as clear as possible. If you get close on a few that, you know, that are kind of right, I'll definitely give them to you. Don't email me with, but actually that team was super owned by this guy who was part of that investment group, which means the continuation of the ownership continued whilst they did move offices from the UK to Italy. You know, none of our listeners are like that, but if your friend is listening and he's like that, just take his phone away from him.
Yeah, just tell him to take a chill pill.
Yeah, man. God, why don't you write a quiz? Jeez. Okay, first question. Yep. Name six teams that have disappeared in the last 10 years.
In the last 10 years?
Yep.
Ooh, I'd have a chance if this was all time, but I mean, I would say, so if I say HRT and Virgin, you count those as two?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Two.
Yes, on the board. How many do I need?
Six, because I calculated about 13. So wow. I know, it seems like a lot, right?
Braun.
Yep, three.
Braun, gone.
Gone. Braun, gone. You're out.
Let me think back. Because I can remember clearly the last, like, few races. Everything else is pretty blurry.
All right. So we've got, so far you've gone Braun, you've gone Virgin, and who was the other one? You said...
HRT,
yeah. Hurt.
I'm thinking Super Aguri.
They...
USF1, they might... that's also...
No. Super Aguri's right up there. Yeah.
Super Aguri's one.
Yeah. So you're on four. Couple more. Come on. There are some more recent ones that you should be able to get.
Yeah, I know. But the problem is that I can remember old stuff and really recent stuff.
So you're like your early 2000s, mid-2000s is not great.
Oh, probably. I mean, I could say, you know, Jordan, but I are they on there?
Yeah, Jordan.
Do you know when they closed down?
Oh, I probably got it on the internet up in front of me.
I do know it's probably in Google.
Wow, 9 results for Jordan. 2005 for Jordan.
2005 just sneaks in there.
Come on, Rod. You can do it.
Oh, pressure is on. It's got to be another team that was like, we were this and we became that.
Or at least, we were a team that then just went away. Like, come on.
Oh, wait, what about, I don't know. Do you count Toyota?
Yeah, you count Toyota.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you count Toyota? Why would you not count Toyota?
I don't know.
I said.
It's your quiz. I don't know.
Nice one. You know, we had some other ones in there. According to me, we had like Midland, Minardi.
Mm. Minardi.
Yeah, Minardi. You could argue Renault.
You can.
Spyker, Honda, British American Racing, BAR. Did you say Jaguar?
No. Oh, I should have said Jaguar.
Jaguar, Virgin, you said that. Yeah, so you did okay. Name the three teams who no longer exist who have won Constructors' Championships in the last 20 years.
Well, Braun was one of those.
Braun is one of them. I think there's a kind of another obvious one we just sort of mentioned a little bit about.
Renault.
Yep, Renault, nice one. So here's the hard one. This is the 10th of the guesses. You may have already mentioned them before tonight.
HRT won a championship?
I know. People will often forget the 1999 World Championship HRT won.
Are you saying Toyota?
No.
No?
Think through your world champions. Think about the guys who, you know, who have been world champions, who might have dragged teams up to the world championship.
Jaguar.
No. Do you want me to just give it to you?
Yeah, I got it.
Benetton. Mm, with that famous driver. Okay.
Fairly Hernando.
Which of the current teams is the only one to have left and then returned to the sport?
Is it Mercedes?
Yes. Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. Good job. You could argue Lotus, but their owners and base and everything has changed. I think they've been in and out of the sport, I think, 3 times. Oh. It's just hard to keep track of them because they've had different investors. Like, it's all over the place.
Hmm.
All right.
You're doing a great job.
I think I'm doing okay. I have a list here of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 drivers, all of which are current drivers who have raced for teams that no longer exist.
Oh, okay.
How many do you think you can name?
Well, I mean, I know... I'm just going to say I could probably name 4.
Okay, 4's good. 4 is a really good number to guess.
I was thinking about Mark Webber, but he's not technically a current driver.
No, not even technically. No. He's not racing.
He got his start with Minardi, but you know what happened when he left? Is a little guy called Fernando Alonso went to Minardi, and Minardi is no longer around. So he'll be one.
Yes, definitely. Fernando Alonso.
Daniel Ricciardo got his start at HRT, so he'll be another one?
Yep, definitely. And look, the Daniel Ricciardo thing is a little bit interesting. I mean, he kind of got his start at HRT.
It was for a couple of races at the end of the year.
Yeah, exactly. And he was with Toro Rosso before that, I think, was it? Yeah, he was with Toro Rosso as the test driver and then went to HRT and did a few races.
Yeah.
Did 11 races and then was in 2011 and then went 2012 back to Scuderia Toro Rosso. 20 races that year in 2012. Interesting.
So, guys, if you're questioning or wondering why do we need these backmarker teams, we could have missed out on Daniel Ricciardo if he didn't get a seat and, you know, progress up the ranks. Mark Webber, Fernando Alonso. That's why we need these backmarker teams.
Well,
anyway,
think about another world champion who's on the grid who raced for teams that no longer exist. Rodney?
He raced for
a couple of teams that no longer exist.
Well, this is probably then going to be Jenson Button.
Yes, Jenson Button, who raced, I mean, it seemed like he raced forever.
He has been. He's so old.
Yeah, seems like he raced forever. Like, he was at BMW Williams, then he was at Benetton, and then he was at Renault, and then he was at Honda, and then Honda was like, we're going to be Braun now, and Braun are like, okay, we'll be Braun now.
We're out.
And then he was like, hey, I'm going to win the world championship, and then he's been with McLaren and since then.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, so you got 3 so far. Daniel Ricciardo, I didn't think you would get. The Daniel Ricciardo one is an interesting one. That's the little ace in the hole. And Jenson Button and Fernando Alonso. There are people in their living rooms screaming into their shortwave radios going, Rodney.
What about Nico Rosberg? He's not on your list?
No.
Okay.
I think the teams he raced for, they still
mostly
exist.
Mostly Mercedes, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
What about Romain Grosjean?
Yes, Romain Grosjean is on my list.
Did it. Can I have one more like crack at a bonus one?
Yeah, of course.
Felipe Massa.
Ooh, no.
That was
Why?
my
Why not Felipe Massa? Yeah, no, I had Kamui Kobayashi.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Sebastian Vettel.
Uh-huh. Well, wait a second. Who did Sebastian Vettel drive for?
Well, this is the complicated thing, right? He's BMW Sauber, but they are classing him as racing as for a team that no longer exists.
I don't count that.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
Because Kimi Raikkonen drove for Sauber as well. But Sauber's still around.
That's true. So why did I put him in? Yeah, no, I don't count that either.
I think the way they're counting that team is not right.
No, it's very, very weird. Yeah, they had one race anyway. There. Did I say Kamui Kobayashi?
You did.
Yep, and Adrian Sutil.
Adrian Sutil, of course.
Yeah, of course. Okay, you did really well then. You do know your stuff. Yeah, you should of yourself. Okay, Rodney Gordon. How many of the current constructors have begun racing in the last 10 years?
5.
Okay, very good. That's what I had. I had 5.
Well, that's right then.
That's totally correct. Can you guess who they are?
No. Oh, okay, well, no, I'll have a stab. Are we counting Red Bull?
Yeah, definitely.
Toro Rosso.
Yep.
And then I guess you've got KTM and Marussia.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one. So anyway.
Lucky number 5, Rod. 10 years. This team hasn't been around for 10 years.
Well, are we talking about Mercedes?
No.
I guess that team's been around for...
Since 1950.
Yeah. Force India?
Yes, Force India. Well done. The shady one is the Lotus thing again. But I put them in brackets, and they're not part of the 5, so they don't count.
Yeah.
That's the quiz.
Well done. Thank you.
You smashed it.
And so timely. You're exactly right.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to know about all that stuff. It definitely for me, just doing the research gave me a lot more history about Formula One, but also made me see how quickly teams come in and out of that sport. You forget, they sort of bottom 4 or 5 teams. You know, we're not big supporters of them. They're not in the news that often until they go bankrupt or they score a point. The rest of the time, we don't hear anything about them.
I think it's different now for us doing a podcast because we're talking about KTM and we're talking about Marussia all the time. And people might remember Marussia for a while with Jules Bianchi happening, but... I think, I definitely remember, like I say, the first 10 years that I watched Formula One, if you weren't driving for a McLaren or Ferrari, there's little chance that I was paying any attention to you at all. I know you were but it just doesn't, I don't retain it.
That's right. And that's, you know, it seems like that's where the drivers get their real starts. You know, we're going to be talking about Max Verstappen for a long time. And if Toro Rosso didn't exist, you know, imagine that.
Absolutely.
That's right. Oh my God. You got everything right. You got every single thing right. You clean swept the quiz.
Well, I don't know that I did that. And also, if I did do that, I don't know that I've ever done that.
No, amazing. I'm going to make my quizzes harder.
You've done a clean sweep of the board before. I don't think I ever have, though.
Well, I'm sure the fans will go back through the archives and find out for us.
Yeah, do that. Let me know.
Cool.
It's time for us to move on. And next week is the Brazilian Grand Prix. So let's have a little chitty chat about it.
So, what's next?
It's Fernando Alonso here to check my lap from the French Grand Prix. Start approaching the main straight. You try to do the last chicane to have a nice exit. Last chicane to have a corner. And then the first quick chicane of the circuit, right left, around 240 kilometers an hour. Well, it seems to be a very high chicane. Again. Now we approach the second chicane, similar characteristics of the first one.
Interlagos. I know it's a high downforce track. I know it's an anti-clockwise track. So if you see drivers with their necks at 90-degree angles trying to stress them out next week, it's because they are driving the opposite direction. All the stress heads the other way.
Does that mean that the teams that run the double dick noses will switch their dick noses the other way?
No, I don't know. I can't say for sure, probably.
Because Lotus tested one of the scoopy noses that McLaren use.
Apparently they tested it during practice or took it with them, but apparently they didn't run it in the race. That's what I heard.
No, because obviously it didn't work that well.
I guess not, yeah.
Because the car sucks.
Clearly they should have stuck with their old nose, which got both cars into the points. Anyway, we're talking about next week. Interlagos, 2 DRS zones. It's a really quick circuit. The lap time's only 1 minute, like 11 seconds. So, I mean, the 71 laps is going to pass before you even know about it.
71? Man, oh man. What time's it on?
You don't even want to know. It's like 3 a.m. our time. That's the reason why Bernie Eccleston invented video recording.
Yeah, I might get up and watch it. Who knows?
What? I'm definitely not.
I like my sport live. I can't. Okay. This is the thing. If you don't get up and watch it, you've got to go through the whole day without getting information.
No, not if you record it and then wake up and watch it bang straight away.
What, like 6 a.m.?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
but all our fans will miss us. We won't be tweeting.
They won't miss us. You will be. You'll be up and tweeting.
Okay. I'll do it for the team.
Or I could just schedule a bunch of tweets. Like, great start. OMG.
Oh, see Hamilton smoking up his brakes into that corner? Yeah. Awkward.
Working out what the current hashtag is going to be weird, though. Like, this weekend it was barbecue happy hour. I don't know what it's going to be. I can't predict that far ahead.
No, exactly. Okay, who are your picks? Tips, your predictions.
I'm going to go with Hamilton to take pole and Rosberg to win, just because he really has to. He really needs a win. Not even necessarily for the points that it's going to get him, but for some momentum and a bit of confidence to keep the last race interesting. So Hamilton to take pole, Rosberg to win, Raikkonen for 10th, Kimi Raikkonen
for 10th. Yep, that's where I'm like at. That. I like that prediction. I like it a lot.
Oh, thanks.
I think Grosjean's going to find a little bit of form and finish 10th.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he's going to win.
Can you imagine?
He's going to find a lot of form.
No. Hamilton's going to go lights the flag. He's going to be pole and the win, just because it's a fast circuit and he knows his way around into Lagos.
Yeah.
It's a fighter circuit. Maybe we'll see some rain, though.
Ooh.
It rains in Brazil. It does. Rains in Brazil.
Could be exciting.
So it could be a Jenson Button special or a Daniel Ricciardo pick up the pieces.
That would be a good birthday present for one Alan Jones QBE, who loves it when it rains during a race. Happy birthday for the other day, AJ.
Haven't mentioned
you for a while.
And you got mentioned by the actual commentator, so congratulations.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm thinking Ham, and then the other guy. Grosjean.
It's going to be a good race. And, you know, I think Brazil, there's a carnival atmosphere around there. It's showtime.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about some other stuff?
Like some champagne.
Yeah, let's have some champagne.
Have you heard about these champagne glasses that are in the shape of Tara Moss's breast?
What?
I took a mold of her breast and made champagne glasses in that shape.
Oh, okay.
Appetizing or no?
No, not appetizing.
Well, that solves that problem. If you have any other problems you want us to solve, you can check us out on Twitter. That's at SuperLicensePod. You guys know how to find us at SuperLicensePod. We're on Facebook as well. Search for SuperLicense Podcast. You'll find us. No problems whatsoever. If you want to tell us your predictions, though, this is where it gets interactive. You tweet us or email us or whatever. Who you think is going to take pole?
Hire
who you
a think sky rider. Have them ride into the sky over my house. You know.
Yeah. Oh, and you can send in. You can send in audio. Record audio. Do it like Cody. Don't do it in the car though. Who's going to take pole? Who's going to win? Who's going to take 10th? Couldn't be easier.
Yeah, and you might end up on the predictions podium, like the audio predictors, the normal predictors. They get all the glory, and you are currently sitting there with your headphones in going, I want some glory. I love glory. Glory is delicious. I haven't had any glory today. Pull out your phone, tweet us. Pull out your phone and go to the mic app or whatever it is on your phone. You might be on a Windows phone. I'm sure it's, MS Record. And record your prediction. You know who's going to win. You're a smart guy. You've been watching Formula One. We've been hearing great things this last couple of weeks. Thank you to all the US listeners who got involved after we put the call out.
Thank you.
If you are in South America, especially if you're in Brazil, I want to hear from you this week. We want to do this every week now, where the race is. We want to hear from the people who are there, who are close, who have lived in Brazil. Well, I want to hear it from all you guys. But also, we've been hearing from a lot of people who have only just started watching Formula One. And it's really gratifying to know that the people who are just starting to watch Formula One are finding it interesting because of our community, maybe our show as well. But that's great for the sport and it's great for everybody else involved. So thank you to all those people who have started watching it and got in touch.
Yeah. I mean, we're here to make Formula One accessible, hopefully entertaining, maybe funny accidentally every now and again. But
Purely by accident.
We take time out to create a show for you. We put in effort. We talk to people. We outsource fake horse races to play. If you could take 1 minute of your time to go to iTunes and just write a review, say 5 stars, I like these guys. That's all you have to do. It doesn't have to be complicated. That's fine. But it helps us get to more people. It helps us reach new and exciting and attractive listeners just like you.
So cool.
We're all done. I'll see you next week, buddy.
It's not, it's like not even that far away.
Nah, not at all.
Yeah, I am amped. It's Tuesday. We're almost there.
Till then, though, I've been Rod.
I've been Zach.
See you later, guys.
See ya. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good stuff. Oh, I forgot. Say it again.
Oh, yeah.
Better.
Better. One more time. Oh, yeah.